Hey, good morning. It's Monday, November 20th. Welcome to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley. My usual co-host on the show, Doug Wells, started his Thanksgiving holiday a little early this week. So joining me in studio is Roger Goldman, one of my favorite people in Park City, and not just because he's on the board of trustees for this fine radio station, KPCW, but also because he's really smart. And when it comes to our first guest this morning, he's been doing a lot of research. Thank you, Roger, for being here.
Good morning. There's nothing like opening our Monday morning with the discussion of a few of the complexities of the tax bill that is winding its way through Congress. If that doesn't wake you up, I don't know what will. We are fortunate this morning to have our first guest, a nationally known tax expert, Scott Michael of the firm of Kaplan and Drysdale, who not only is an expert, a tax expert, but had the good fortune to graduate from the University of Virginia.
Oh, wahoo wah. We're both graduates of UVA. Sorry, I had to put that plug in. You've been looking into how this new tax plan, which the House passed last week, the Republicans are talking about right now. You've been looking into how that affects all of us when it comes to what we can write off our taxes, both individually and with our businesses and with our real estate. You were talking about the three ways that it affects us in regards to real estate. So we're going to dig into that. It's going to be very interesting. Then we're going to move on to something that's a little bit easier to understand, at least for me, and that's holiday shopping, specifically how to do it online safely. We've got someone with Consumer Reports who's going to join us over the phone with some tips about holiday shopping online. And then finally, we will visit with Sharon Backhertz. She's this amazing woman behind a company called Zenzi. She lives in the Park City area, and Zenzi and Sharon make comfortable shoes and really cool graphic t-shirts. We're going to hear about her product line, how she got started, and plans for growing her business. That's all coming up this next hour on Mountain Money, and we will be right back.
I'm Beth Lohman from Park City Mountain and KPCW sponsor. Epic Promise grants focus on youth programs and environmental initiatives that impact our community. Grants fund programs that help kids achieve great things in the classroom and develop a passion for the outdoors by engaging guests, our local community, and employees to create a more promising future. More information at epicpromise.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley here with Roger Goldman. Let's start talking taxes. The Trump tax plan is getting a lot of buzz. It's the biggest overhaul of this country's tax code since the 1980s. The House passed their version of the bill just last week. Now, here's a development that happened this weekend. A version of this tax plan that was put forward by the Senate Republican leaders would remove a requirement in Obamacare that taxes Americans who decline to buy health insurance. That's known as the individual mandate. So in other words, you wouldn't be penalized if you don't have health care. Right now, if you don't have health care, you pay a tax penalty. But now the Trump administration is saying they won't insist on dropping that personal mandate. They'll be okay if the bill passes without it, even though getting rid of that mandate was one of President Trump's goals and remains one of his goals. He campaigned on it, but more important to the president is getting this tax bill passed. Republicans can only afford to lose two votes on this bill because of their slim 52-48 majority in the Senate. And at least one Republican senator, Susan Collins of Maine, has made it clear she thinks health care should be dealt with separately. Meanwhile, five other Republican senators have also expressed concerns about this bill. Can the Republicans get this bill passed? What does it mean to you? Roger Goldman's been digging into this for the past week. Roger, take it away.
Good morning, and I want to welcome our guest, Scott Michael of the firm of Kaplan and Drysdale. Good morning, Scott. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Scott, I'd like to start by talking a little bit about the process that's going on here. Renee mentioned a moment ago, I don't know if you were able to hear her, that this is the first major tax overhaul since the 1980s, when both you and I were far younger but do remember it. Talk a little bit about the process that we're going through now and how it differs from what happened then.
Well, the tax reform or tax simplification or tax cut, whichever phrase you might wish to use, package, is driven right now by the numbers. The House and the Senate gave themselves $1.5 trillion to add to the debt within a 10-year period. And so, for example, Renee mentioned the repeal of the mandate. While that has obvious effects on the healthcare world and is sort of a third rail issue politically, the whole point of that is it frees up something in the neighborhood of $300 billion, which can then be plugged into the tax bill and the various estimates for revenue that are being done. This is a bit of a different process because we have one party in control of both houses of Congress. This is a complicated piece of legislation that has not gone through the usual array of hearings and outreach to the other side and compromises and discussions, the sorts of activity that led Bradley and Gephardt back in 1986 to produce the reform package that was implemented then. And that has some consequences. First of all, it has been a feeding frenzy in Washington for tax lobbyists. And if you go through a summary of the bill's provisions, it will not shock your listeners that there are some very specific provisions that appear to be aimed at very specific industries that either grant tax preferences or remove them. And this is all the product of lobbying and politics aimed at affecting the way a particular type of business is conducted in the United States. The second thing that is a byproduct of this is that there are going to be terms in this legislation that are undefined. There are going to be provisions where there is some ambiguity. And you really could call this the sort of Lawyers and Accountants Relief Act of 2017, because taxpayers and their advisors will look for loopholes, will look for ways to reduce their U.S. and global tax rate based on the interplay of these various provisions, and that will result through the audit process and IRS guidance process in a lot of litigation, a lot of exams, a lot of litigation, a lot of rulings over the next, 10 years or so, and it's a byproduct of the fact that this is being done so quickly. So I think those are sort of the takeaways from the process. But it does appear to be on track.
And just to clarify one thing, the $1.5 trillion number that you mentioned, they need to have the net effect of this bill over the next 10 years to be $1.5 trillion or less in order to be able to pass it in the Senate with a 51-vote majority. Is that how that works?
Exactly. That's exactly how it works.
Because they're using that thing called reconciliation. And
right.
And that also explains why we've heard some things that are a little confusing about how, while the corporate tax cuts that we'll be talking about are permanent, many of the individual tax cuts expire after 5 or 7 years. I take it that's another effort to jam this thing under that $1.5 trillion number.
Yes. I mean, really, this is a package of tax preferences and changes at the individual level, at the corporate level, across the board, that zero out to that $1.5 trillion number. What's different a little bit this go-round than back in 1986 is that the principal tax reduction here is occurring on the corporate side. There are a bunch of rules being changed here, with the larger objectives being to reduce the corporate tax rate on the theory that would make American business more competitive and keep companies from migrating outside the United States, and it would also lower the pass-through rate, which is a sort of a result of thinking on the Republican side that small businesses are conducted largely through pass-through entities, they generate jobs, and we want to encourage and incentivize those individuals to embark on an expansion to try to grow the economy.
So we on this program like to focus on local impacts, and you just touched on pass-throughs. We believe that many of the small businesses here in Park City are run through corporate structures that would allow that are pass-throughs, and therefore, as it stands now, the income from those are paid at ordinary income tax individual rates. Is that how that works?
That's how that works. It's a return is filed. You have what's called, say, a subchapter S corporation. So you have the XYZ company. It's a subchapter S corporation. It buys and sells, it sells widgets. And whatever the profit of that company is not taxed at the corporate level. It passes through directly to the individual owner's returns.
So this would reduce the tax rate that those people pay down to, I think, one number I saw was 25%. Is that so? That's right.
Okay. That's right. And there's an issue here because, to the extent, Roger, you and I are lawyers and we practiced in law firms, and a lot of law firms are organized as pass-through businesses, accounting firms, engineering firms, architects, people who provide professional services, the congressional tax writers do not want to give a preferential rate to the likes of these professional service providers. And so they're engaged in sort of a line-drawing exercise here to give the benefit to, say, a small manufacturing company, because that generates jobs, but not to give the benefit to a local architect who may, in fact, generate jobs because he's got a big project and he's got to hire two or three juniors to help her. So there is a line-drawing exercise being made here as a matter of policy, but the ultimate objective is to reduce the pass-through rate on manufacturers.
And on the corporate side, the theory is that if we reduce the tax rate, we become more competitive. Historically, I've heard the argument that while our nominal tax rate is higher than the rest of the world, our real tax rate, because of various kinds of deductions and loopholes, is comparable to the rest of the world. How does this bill deal with that?
Well, the overall reduction in the corporate tax rate, I think down to 20%, is aimed at creating an image of the U.S. as being a simpler place to do business without, you know, having to spend hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars for a big company in rejiggering transactions to try to take advantage of some of those so-called loopholes, sort of a flatter rate, if you will. The corporate side is also our current international system allows big companies to hold lots of money offshore. And the objective here, one of the objectives here, is to try to incentivize these major companies to bring their overseas profits into the United States on the theory that they will be invested in capital and equipment and facilities and hiring higher skilled workers and paying people more money, that, again, the objective being to grow the economy. Remember, we started out at the $1.5 trillion number. This bill has yet to be scored by the Joint Committee on Taxation. There's this long-running debate about whether you do static scoring or dynamic scoring. Dynamic scoring is taking into account how much the economy grows and how much additional tax revenue would be generated. So there's a real pressure point here, Roger, on lowering the rates and hoping that companies will in fact use their additional money and bring in these profits and repatriate the funds and invest that money rather than, for example, engaging in stock buybacks or paying out more in dividends.
And, of course, there was that remarkable interaction between Gary Cohn when he was at the Wall Street Journal Forum last week when he looked around the room and he says, so if we get this tax bill through, how many of you are going to engage in capital investments? And I think four hands went up. So it's not clear.
I heard the view that the lighting was bad in the room. So
one thing I wanted to touch on was that you and I meant to talk before is the change in the ability to write off capital investments. And, again, thinking about our town and looking out the window and thinking it would be really nice if Vail decided to upgrade that really slow ski lift over on the town lift. Is that the kind of thing that would allow them, in principle, to be able to write off that quickly and thereby encourage investments of that type?
Yes. I mean, I don't know technically whether there's a lot of qualifications and technical exceptions and so forth that are built into this and, you know, many other parts of the tax code. So I don't know specifically whether it would cover a faster lift, but the objective of that provision is to encourage companies like the company there to go out and buy a big new piece of equipment. Yes.
Now let's break it down to the individuals. How does this affect the rich, which I understand it helps them, and the middle class, which I understand it's a little unclear?
Well, there are varying analyses that have been done, and it's really hard to say that one is better than the other. So I think a lot of this is just a bit of an educated guess. I do think you can look at some of the tangible implications for individuals, for example. So the personal exemptions would be eliminated under actually both the House and the Senate bill. So if you have a middle-income family with a large number of children and they've been able to claim exemptions for, you know, their family, that's going to disappear. On the other hand, their standard deduction is going to go up. So there's a little bit of a give and take there. For individuals who own, real estate, personal residences, whether, you know, big expensive houses or more modest houses. The bill has a lot of impacts. I mean, first of all, the state and local taxes are no longer going to be deductible. I think one of the proposals allows you to deduct up to $10,000 in property tax. But if people pay larger amounts than that in property taxes for big pieces of property, those amounts are no longer deductible. Secondly, there's going to be a limitation on the amount of interest one can deduct on a mortgage. It's going to reduce the limitation. The bill would reduce the limitation to $500,000 in debt from $1 million in debt. So fewer people will be able to deduct mortgage interest. And then thirdly, there is an exclusion on paying capital gains when you sell your house. But that exclusion is going to be both reduced and then eliminated for high-income earners. So, you know, for a listener there who's got a, you know, a nice piece of real estate, they're going to get hit on all three of those. Now, having said that, in the same give-and-take framework, that individual now faces a limitation on the amount of itemized deductions that they can claim overall, and the House bill is going to eliminate that limitation. So, Renee, it's almost impossible to take a given individual's economic circumstance and plug it through a model right now and say, are my taxes going to go up as a result or not? In fact, I saw a piece in the press over the weekend that the company that makes TurboTax has been asked to do that, and things are moving too quickly, and there's really no time.
But the one thing it would seem to me that we might predict was that those three phenomenon that we just talked about would certainly tend to have a downward pressure on real estate values.
Yeah, I think that's an economist question, but I think that's right. I think if you're going to reduce the ability of people to write off mortgage debt, the calculation that somebody makes in buying a house where they say, well, you know, I'm going to take on a big mortgage here, but at least I'll get a tax deduction for my interest, that's going to disappear, and you would think just as a natural result, that's going to lower the amount of debt somebody's going to want to take on, which in turn affects the value somebody can sell their house for.
And a clear tax break for the wealthy is the elimination of the estate tax. Can you explain what that means?
That's something, Renee, that I think has not gotten the attention that it should, because there's a political discussion about whether this legislation benefits the rich or not. And you hear people defending the legislation talking about the fact that wealthy people's tax brackets are not going to be affected all that much. They're going to lose their ability to deduct state and local taxes in high-tax jurisdictions. But for the truly wealthy families in the United States, if the estate tax is eliminated, that is an incredible benefit. You know, the estate tax does not raise a lot of money for the government. It's more of a policy and a social choice that the country has made over the years to try to discourage the building of you know, what you might call sort of dynastic wealth. And it is very true that wealthy families are able to take a number of steps to reduce and minimize their estate tax liability by the creation of trust and the like. But the fact of the matter is that eliminating the estate tax is going to mean that there's some very wealthy families in this country who, when the patriarch or the matriarch pass on, there will be a much larger transfer to the next generation than you would have if the tax were in place.
And what happens to the alternative minimum tax?
Well, the AMT, which I find just to be incredibly complicated, will go away. There's a real question right now over who exactly pays the alternative minimum tax. I think people would, as a gut reaction, say, okay, well, that's a tax for the rich who go out and are able to shelter their income in various ways, and it makes sure they pay a fixed amount of tax no matter what they do. And that, to some extent, is true. But the AMT also falls on, you know, people who make, say, $1 million, $1.2 million. And, yes, I understand that is rich, but that's not like, you know, Warren Buffett rich. And these individuals who live in, say, high state tax jurisdictions are hit with the AMT because their deductions are too high. And so there's a real sense of sort of consistency and fairness about whether the AMT captures the right people. And at the end of the day, if you eliminate the AMT altogether, then there are going to be some very wealthy people who would otherwise have paid it that won't.
And, of course, the most prominent example of that was when we saw the president's 2005 tax return and realized that without the AMT, he would have paid $32.5 million or so less in taxes in that 1 year.
Exactly.
Now, I want to go back to the estate tax for just a second, although we are running out of time. To me, you know, the two arguments we've heard in favor of abolishing the estate tax are, one, it's really hard on family farms and small businesses, which, as best I can tell, it doesn't really affect that many estates anyway. I think it was like 3,000 or 4,000 or some number like
that.
Yeah,
it's about 5,500, yeah.
Okay. And the second thing is that it's taxing on money that's already been taxed. But, Scott, can you just take 1 minute and talk about how, you know, with this concept of a stepped-up basis, that's really not necessarily true?
Right. When somebody dies, say they own $1 million worth of stock that they purchased for $200,000, and had they sold that stock for $1 million before their death, they would pay a capital gains tax of $800,000 of gains. But the law allows for a stepped-up basis on death, and so on the day that individual dies, that $1 million. Now it can be sold the next day tax free, and so that $800,000 the day after the person dies is not going to get taxed anyway.
Ever.
Because the stepped up basis would kick in.
I want to talk real quickly before we go about a couple of other sort of things that people have mentioned in the bill that are confusing or interesting. One is you mentioned to me this morning that the tax bill allows for the creation of 529 plans, which are the ability to use tax-advantaged investment for education in utero.
Yes, that's a provision in the House bill. So as soon as somebody finds out, a married couple finds out that they're pregnant, they don't have to wait until they set up a 529 plan, they can get one started. Now, I don't know how the mechanics of that work because you got to have a Social Security number to open up for your child to open a 529 plan. So this is the kind of thing that's being rushed through to make a political statement without, I think, a lot of thought being given in terms of how it's going to work.
A lot of pro-choice advocates obviously take issue with that because it gives personhood status to an unborn child that they say legitimizes that and then will make it easier in future legislation to establish that.
And one of the interesting things about that provision, Scott, as I understand it, is that it would also allow you to use a 529 plan, tax-advantaged, you know, vehicle to pay for private, you know, secondary and elementary schools, which, again, people are going to view as, I think, as a threat to, you know, public education.
Yes, that's in there too. And I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and I just think any time you try to use the tax code to engender serious hot button social policy, you're asking for trouble. And you know, again, this is the kind of thing that if you had a more bipartisan process, would be more likely to get worked out in the nature of compromises.
Well, I don't think that's the process we're going to have. It'll be interesting to see whether they can, in fact, get this thing through with the 50 votes they need. Thanks for taking the time with us, Scott. We really appreciate your insights, and we'll be talking to you soon.
All right. Thanks for having me on, and happy Thanksgiving.
And coming right up, we'll talk about online shopping safety for this holiday season. Mountain Money will be right back.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by Big D Construction, DeJuria Center at High Star Ranch, and Esco Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's Esco, ESCO.
Valley Behavioral Health is a local nonprofit and proud supporter of KPCW. We are your community behavioral health center and provide a broad range of services, including individual, family, couples, and group therapy for mental health and substance abuse. We serve all ages in all of Summit County. Please check out our website at valleycares.com or 649-8347 for more information.
Hello, this is Diane Reinhart with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. We are a proud supporter of KPCW and have been providing our clients with real estate services since 1976. All current and active listings can be found on our website at bhhsutah.com, and our agents can help navigate the real estate market.
Hi, this is Greg Cropper of Jones Waldo Park City, a Park City law office. I've been a big fan of KPCW since its first broadcast back in 1980. Jones Waldo's been representing clients from Summit and Wasatch counties since 1875. You can find us at joneswaldo.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley here with my co-host Roger Goldman. We are trying to get our next guest from Consumer Reports on the phone. We're dialing away. Stay with us. We're going to play a couple more underwriting spots and hopefully come back with our next guest. We'll be right back.
This is Ryan Hoffman, manager at Mountain West Bank, sponsor of KPCW. We're a community bank with a great understanding of our local needs. Mountain West Bank has something unheard of nowadays, but I can't say it on the radio. We're next to the movies near Kearns Boulevard at 649-3369. Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. Cookies on Fridays.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, introducing Apex Residences, 63 ski-through community residences located at Park City's expanded Canyon Village, with clubhouse amenities, heated outdoor pool, and in-house concierge. Information at apexparkcity.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. The latest Consumer Reports magazine has an article on how to shop online with confidence. Joining us on the phone is Nikhil Hattasingh, the deputy editor at Consumer Reports. Good morning. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did.
Oh, good. How are you this morning?
Unusual. I'm very well, thank you.
Good. Well, tell our listeners, what do they need to know to be safe online this year?
You know, I think one of the big attractions of going online is obviously being safe, but it's also the simplicity of it. There are so many people who like to go to the store and actually see and feel a product before they buy it. But if you want to kind of do away with having to walk through crowds and trying to park, shopping online is a great alternative. There are so many really cool tools that you can use when you're online that you wouldn't have access to, if you went into a store.
What are some of those tools?
Well, there's one that's called Invisible Hand, and it tracks prices at 11,000 online stores. So when you're looking at a product on a website, Invisible Hand notices, and if it notices the same product for less somewhere else, it alerts you.
How do you get Invisible Hand?
Invisible Hand, you can go to the website. You can Google Invisible Hand, go to the website, and you download it. It's a browser extension, so it becomes part of your Firefox or Safari or Chrome browser, and then it just works while you're online. There's another one that's really cool, too. You can automate the coupon search. So I think before a lot of people buy, they often go and Google for discounts on or for coupons for the product that they're interested in. And instead of doing that, you can use this program called Honey, which you can also get at honey.com, and that automatically enters coupon codes for you when you're shopping. So those are two that are interesting. There's another one that I really like if you want to hear about it.
Sure, yeah.
It's to buy a gift card below face value. So you can go onto a website. One of them is called Raise, and another is called Card Cash, and you can buy gift cards that are at less than face value. So right there, you've got like savings of $5 to $10, depending on how much. And then you can use those gift cards to purchase gifts for other people.
Now, did you say Raise, R-A-Z-E?
It's R-A-I-S-E.
R-A-I-S-E.com,
yeah.
Then cardcash.com,
right.
And then honey, right. As in honey is sweet.com?
Exactly. That's right.
Great. Yep.
Going back to Invisible Hand, and I know that one of the concerns of Consumer Reports is obviously safety. If I am using Invisible Hand, am I not sort of giving to a third party a really direct indication of what I'm interested in? And are they going to in turn sell that to people who are going to be bombarding me with ads?
You are. That's a good point that you do have to be careful about that. And Invisible Hand will take that information and watch you. But you agree to it beforehand, so you know whether or not they're watching what you're doing or not.
Mm-hmm.
And some people feel that, you know, sometimes it's worth giving that up for the discount that they're achieving.
Do you know whether Invisible Hand is selling that information to potential marketers?
I believe they're not.
Okay.
I believe they're not. I'm not 100% sure on that, though. So I think that is something that you should check before deciding whether you want to go with them or not.
Now, Nikhil, I saw something online just this morning called Incognito that allows me to surf and browse, and it prevents the cookies from coming up. It prevents the websites from knowing what I'm looking for. And I didn't even realize that an airline, if I'm looking for a round-trip ticket somewhere, that they'll conspire to raise the price on me, gauging based on how many times I click to look for the price. Incognito apparently can save me from that. Do you know anything about that service and whether it's any good?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's not really a service, I believe. It's more of a feature that different browsers have, and they go by different names. But, you know, when you go online, there are a number of companies out there that are increasingly using dynamic pricing to kind of watch your movements online and also to watch what people in general are doing. And then they try to, it's almost a game that they play with you in order to get you to buy and when they think the best time might be for you to buy. So there are things you can do. You can go incognito, which you can do on a number of different browsers, and then they can't really track what you're doing. You can also try logging in from a different computer or a different browser using a different email address. And sometimes that'll also be a way to put them off guard, and they won't know that it's you who's been there before.
What other tips do you have for our listeners?
Well, I mean, along the same lines, you know, there are all kinds of rewards that you can get if you're trying to save money when you're online. Besides using a credit card that offers rewards, you can sign up at a shopping portal like Shopkick or Ebates, and you create an account at one of those sites, and then you click through to the retailer using that rather than going directly to the retailer's homepage. And there may be rewards there that'll be applied. There are also Amazon Prime. A lot of people shop on Amazon this time of year. It's a great way to get things delivered to your home. But if you don't want to pay the $99 fee for Amazon Prime, what you can also do is sign up for a free trial. It's a 30-day free trial. And during that time, you get 2-day free shipping. And just need to be really sure that if you don't want to pay the $99 fee, that you cancel your membership before the 30-day period is up.
And you offer something else that's really interesting. Whenever I'm online at a retailer and the little instant messaging chat comes up and it's the person saying, "Hi, I'm Ginger. Can I help you?" I usually ignore it or close it out because it kind of creeps me out that there's somebody who wants to talk to me. But that could be a good thing, according to your article.
You know, it can be an opportunity for you to ask for a discount. And so many people don't think to do that, either on the phone or through instant messaging online or an online chat, that often all you need to do is ask, you know, if there are any kind of discounts that they could apply right now or if something is going to be going on sale, and they'll give you a better price.
You can haggle over instant messaging?
You can haggle over instant messaging. Who would think?
Wow. And then you say play hard to get. What do you mean by that?
Play hard to get. I'm trying to remember when we said that. I think
abandon a full shopping cart.
Yeah. You know what you can also do, and again, it goes back to this whole idea of dynamic pricing a little bit. But you can take something that you're interested in buying, and you can put it in your shopping cart and just leave it there. And sometimes a retailer will see that it's sitting there, and they'll lower the price in order to kind of get you to go ahead through with and to process the transaction and go through with it.
Your article mentions one. I'm sorry, your article mentions one specific example that came from Kate Spade. That caught my eye. Kate Spade, as one example, recently offered a shopper 15% off an order she left in her cart overnight.
Yes. Yep, that's one example. So, you know, it's an opportunity, but it can also be a risk because there's always a chance that the price will go up.
Oh, gosh. I'm sorry, I interrupted you there. What else were you going to add to that?
No, I think that's about it. There's another way that people can consider saving is by shopping on December 15th, which is free shipping day. And on that day, I think more than 1,000 retailers are expected to offer free shipping with no minimum purchase. So, you know, if you go onto freeshippingday.com, and you take a look at the retailers over there that are participating in this, you can get a free shipping code, and then you can use it on December 15th to get free shipping. There were some big stores last year, like JCPenney, Barnes & Noble, and Toys R Us that all offered this.
As this time of year comes and so many people are engaged in online shopping, I asked you earlier about sort of dangers. Can you touch a little bit on you know, dangers that you see and risks associated. For example, I know at least now almost once a week I get an email from somebody pretending to be somebody they're not and asking me to verify my payment information. What are you seeing out there that consumers should be wary of?
Well, I mean, there are definitely scams out there. There are all kinds of online threats. So you need to be careful, you know, when you're shopping. There are steps you can take beforehand to make sure that you're safe, sort of making sure that your software is all up to date and that you also have up to date apps that you're using. You know, if there are any bugs that that your software providers have alerted you to, now's the time to kind of update them. It's also a good idea to have stronger passwords rather than weak passwords. A lot of people have weak ones that they can just simply remember. But because there are so many risks out there at the moment, especially scammers, I think this is the biggest time of the year for people who are trying to make money through scams, especially when it comes to charities and people who are pretending to be charitable sites and they're not. You really need to be very aware of what's out there right now, and you need to the best advice also is just to be on a very secure system and don't give out your credit card number or do anything like that when you're on a public Wi-Fi system, for example, if you're shopping.
One, you mentioned charities, people pretending to be charities and they're not. One of the things I always look for is to make sure the website is a .org, because mm-hmm. that signals that they're a nonprofit. But what are other ways you know for sure that you're dealing with a charity?
Well, you know, I think that you could go to places like the Better Business Bureau website and do a search on that. You can also go to the charity watchdogs, sites like Charity Watch, Charity Navigator, and the Better Business Bureau's Wise Giving Alliance. And a really good idea is to check out these charities on those sites. They may be listed there. They may not be listed there. But the best ones are, if you look over there, they've done the work. They've looked deep into them. They've examined their forms. And you can see whether or not they're rated highly or not rated highly, and not only in terms of whether they're real, but also in terms of how they use the money that you're giving to them. If they're not listed there, you can go onto a website like GuideStar and download the 990 form. It gets a little bit more complicated. Then you have to go through their financials yourself. But it's worth doing to make sure that you're giving money to a legitimate organization.
That's great advice, especially because these days a lot of people are saying, don't give me a gift, give to a charity in my name.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Of course, we would prefer they give the money to KPCW, but that's neither here nor there.
That's great. Nikhil, thank you very much for joining us today. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's it. I hope everybody has a safe and fun holiday season.
Thank you. Nikhil Hatasingh, he is the deputy editor at Consumer Reports, talking about shopping with confidence online. We'll make sure that we put a link to the websites that he mentioned during this interview on our website, kpcw.org, when we post this show later today. Thanks again, Nikhil. And then coming up next, our third guest, Sharon Backertz. She's well known in this Park City area. She is the brains and the creative power behind Zenzy. We'll talk to her right after this.
Being a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business and provides a wide array of benefits. We promote your business, provide networking and educational opportunities, and even have benefit programs for you and your employees. For more information, visit us online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization and a proud supporter of KPCW.
Matt here from San Francisco Design. Since the start of our business in 1990, we have been supporting KPCW. We offer home decor for Park City and Salt Lake and feature modern furnishings from around the world. Whether you're looking to furnish an entire home or just redecorating a single room, we can help with our in-house design team. Located on Bonanza Drive and on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. I'm Renee Bodley here with my co-host Roger Goldman. It is 9:45 on Monday, November 20th. Joining us in studio right now is the woman behind Zenzy. Sharon Backertz joins us. Good morning, Sharon.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad that you are here, and you brought a whole bucket of goodies. I wish we were television right now so we could show our listeners what you brought in with you. Zenzy is a really cool brand. You make shoes and T-shirts.
And graphic apparel, yep.
Graphic apparel. So tell us how you got your start.
Well, I'm a graphic designer for most of my life. And when I moved to Park City, I kind of launched myself into the nonprofit world and doing a bit of outdoor. And I decided that I really wanted to do it for myself. And so Zenzi started as a side project. I had done some design work for a brand called Hoka One One, which is that very ultra-cushioned running shoe. And some of that thinking and tribe building went into creating Zenzi.
Now, I spoke with a mutual friend of ours last week, and she said she loves wearing your shoes. And she said they feel like slippers, but she wears them outside.
They are indoor-outdoor shoes, and I wear them every day. So,
if you can describe to our listeners what these shoes look like. They're kind of like clogs, kind of like slippers. They're open-heeled, and they've got a pretty thick sole.
Yes, this is my second collection, and it's a little bit different than my first collection. And I have slip-on mules is what I call them, and they have a platform sole. I have a lace-up sneaker that's backless, and I have a slip-on that looks just like a slipper. And I also have a slide, which is a denim slide, and it comes with patches that you can remove, a set of six patches. And they're very playful, like emoji-like patches.
They're really neat. So they're circular, and you've got one that's a big red heart. You've got one that's a yin-yang. Is that what you call it, yin-yang? And then a peace symbol as well. So do you have two of each one? So I could have two hearts, or I could do a heart on one foot and a peace sign on another foot?
No, I'm forcing you to be creative. You only get one of each. I have a sloth if you're lazy, and a smiley face, and also a mustache man.
So that's pretty cool. So your coworkers will know exactly what kind of mood you're in when you walk in wearing maybe the smiley face or the sloth.
Exactly.
Probably not smart to wear the sloth to work. What do you think, Roger?
It all depends on how hard you want to work that day. Where are you doing your manufacturing?
In China. So this is my second collection. And between my first and second collection, I kind of went back to the drawing board and I re-prototyped. And I went to Peru and back to China and also to Mexico. And ended up back in China because I also launched College Shoes. And you have to be NCAA compliant with your factory. And they just really made the best shoes. So I chose a new factory in China that I'm really happy with.
Do you have employees here?
Nope, it's just me and interns.
How many interns do you have?
Right now, I have one. And I'm also working with the PC Caps kids. And I have two young ladies, and they're wonderful to work with. They are helping me with a marketing plan to sell to the U and working on doing a survey to test sorority shoes.
You know, to me, it's really impressive that a one-person business, you know, is able to set up a manufacturing system and get production through to China. Are you having to spend a lot of time managing that process, or have you been able to really find an organization that can help you?
I was really lucky that my licensing partner happens to be a footwear expert, and he has many, many years in the business. So he's helped me tremendously. But I think of myself as a design entrepreneur, so we're very process-oriented and focused on the end result. And so, yeah, I do spend a lot of time in the prototyping process.
One of the things I like about your design is I love word games. And Roger, I'm going to hold up this T-shirt, and I'm going to explain to the audience what you're seeing. What do you see on this T-shirt?
I see a fly imposed on a Superman emblem. So is that Superfly?
Superfly, you got it. I got on your site and saw that and thought it was very funny. There's another one that has, we can't say it on the radio.
Oh. It's a four-letter word, literally, and it's on a bat.
Uh-huh. So it's bat.
It's not bat crazy?
You know what? Not
Cray-cray.
Bat crazy. You've got another great T-shirt here, a black T-shirt and white lettering that says...
Girl Boss, that's a gift for you. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much.
It seems very timely with the news of the weekend now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. That's true. So let's talk about where people can buy these products here in town.
Jolie has carried me for 2 years, and I'm very grateful that she stuck with me. And Mary Jane's just picked up the line. She picked up T-shirts and shoes, and then Urban Renewal also sells T-shirts and shoes.
What's your price point?
It ranges. My first collection's on sale for $55, and $68 to $75 are the cost of the shoes. But I also just launched today, actually, because Zenzis make great gifts, and I have college shoes and red shoes, so they really work for the minors and the youths. So with the high school, I give $10 back a pair to support the Booster Club. So that just launched today. So if you want to buy gifts, that's something that helps the school too.
So they can go to any of those stores, or they can go to your website, which is?
ShopZenzi.com.
ShopZenzi.com. So they would buy a pair of shoes for how much with this $10 give back to the Booster Club?
Oh, they have a code that puts $10 off the cost, and then I give that back to the school.
Gotcha. Now, are you ready with product? Do you have enough product for the holiday season? I mean, the good news is, right, you're going to get a lot of customers, we hope, from this interview, people who are listening. So, you know, if suddenly the orders come sweeping in and you realize that supply might be a little short, can you rebound quickly from that?
Oh, yes. I have the new collection just landed, and it's in a warehouse in Salt Lake. I have a great warehouse called Columbus Services that employs disabled people. And so that feels really great, too. I love to go visit the warehouse.
That's the Columbus Center down there in South Salt Lake, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
That's a great program. They employ adults with disabilities, and it's wonderful for the families of Utah. There are so many, hundreds of families, I believe, that they help down there. What do they do for your product line?
They pick and pack. They build the boxes. They put the postcards and stickers inside the box and get it ready to ship.
Now, you're also a member of the Park City Arts Council, is that right?
I am. I'm on the board.
And what kind of work do you do with them then?
Well, I really love to do the programming pieces, so I'm helping always with whatever's going on, special events that the Arts Council is putting on. And we actually have one coming up. December 2nd is the beginning of Branded PC, which is being hosted by the Kimball Arts Center. It's a really great... it's a week this time, but it's a really great event, and it kicks off on the 2nd and goes all the way through to the following Sunday, which I think is the 10th. And we have double the brands we had last year. Last year was our pilot program of this, and we have over 40 brands this year, all Park City, Summit County, local entrepreneurs.
So it's sort of like Etsy on steroids, this branded PC, isn't it? Where you walk in and you see, you have tables and you can buy things there, can't you?
Yes, you can. We like to think of it as magazine meets retail, where we're really telling the stories of these entrepreneurs. We, you know, write up a little piece about them. They give us three words and they don't have to do anything. They just show up for the party, enjoy themselves, and then we sell their product all week long.
And how did you pick the 40 brands that will be part of this?
Well, last year it was really hard trying to find them. There's no list that exists. And so towards the end of the event, we started having a lot of people come up to us and say, can we do this next year? And so we just kept adding to the list. And so we had a bigger list to go out to. And they're trickling in under the wire. We're really closed because we're at capacity with what we can handle. But, they've been knocking on the door. So if we do it again next year, I think it'll be even bigger.
You know, as a successful local entrepreneur, I guess I'd be curious as to what other things you think the community should be doing to promote entrepreneurship here in town. What can we do to help small businesses launch like yours has?
Well, I feel very supported. This community is amazing. Through the Arts Council and also through Panda Labs, I'm in the peer-to-peer program there, and I'm benefiting greatly from that, just being around smart people. And like I said earlier, I'm a design entrepreneur, so there's some holes in me as a whole, as an entrepreneur, and they're really helping to groom me or, you know, point me in the right direction with Facebook advertising or SEO, those kinds of things. So I think we need more of that. And I think the Arts Council can, especially since Project ABC kind of, that's one of the big things that bubbled up from Project ABC is support for entrepreneurs and artists.
And Leslie Thatcher just had Hadley Dynack on the local news hour this morning, where she talked about the ABC survey. That's a really interesting conversation that they had this morning. You can go online to kpcw.org and listen to that. Do you think this community, how do I phrase this politically correctly? Do you think we need to give more money to arts and culture here in Park City?
I might lose my spot on the board if I didn't say yes.
That was a layup, wasn't it? I'm sorry. Okay. How do we follow up on that, Roger?
Well, it seems to me that from what you just said, you know, when you talk about something like a Pando Labs, there are, I think, uniquely nurturing elements of this community. And so, you know, explain to our viewers, our listeners, and we've had Pando Labs people on in the past.
We have, yeah.
But how did they work with you?
Well, it's very casual, actually, and kind of under the radar. The first time I was invited, it was just to the happy hour. So then I was kind of like, oh, I hope they let me in. I hope they let me in. And then I got an email saying, yeah, come back. And so we sit around for an hour in a conference room, and we go around the table saying our challenges and successes. Sometimes we have dedicated sessions, like I talked about earlier, Facebook advertising or whatever it is. And then offline, the mentors in the group are really amazing at connecting you with their resources, or, you know, there's just a lot of support with that program.
I would think, especially in terms of marketing with social media, it seems like there's always somebody out there who's doing it better that you can learn from. Do you share ideas about Facebook and Instagram? I'm assuming you do a lot on social media sites for your brand.
Yes, I do. And yes, yeah, there's always something to learn there. It's ever changing.
Pinterest. Do you still do Pinterest?
I love Pinterest. And with the launch of the college line and getting into sororities, I'll be doing more Pinterest. It's really hard to do it all.
That's where the intern comes in, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
You tried to hire the 20-something to come in to show us how to do that. So show us what else you have in here. She has her bag of goodies.
Well, I have I launched with 5 red schools. And so I have Utah, Stanford, Wisconsin, Ohio, and Nebraska. And then I have a generic varsity. I call it generic, but it's really just a double-striped red shoe. So it's very varsity-looking.
And do men buy these as well?
Some have. They're not really supposed to, but I had a tipsy person at Park Silly Sunday, much to his wife's dismay, buy a bright blue pair.
Oh, dear.
I know.
And so Park Silly, you've been doing Park Silly for how long?
I started this summer. I've only done 4 of them. And that's another great support system for our local entrepreneurs. So many brands have launched at Park Silly, and it's a really great way to test a new product, or you know have touch points with your customers. It's great to see people picking your product up, and it's really great to see people around town wearing your stuff. Like, that just thrills me.
And do you stop them and say, I made that shoe that you're wearing?
No.
All right, Sharon Backertz with Zenzy. Anything else you want our listeners to hear about your brand?
Just a lot of gratitude with this week coming up with being a community member here. And thanks for having me on the show.
And tell us again, Branded PC starts on the 2nd and goes through the 10th. And where do you go for that?
Kimball Arts Center. And our hours are on our site, which is brandedpc.org.
Great. Thank you. Sharon Backertz with Zenzy, and it's shopzenzy.com. You're listening to Mountain Money. We'll be right back.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air Cruise and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com, Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, Fred Marshall Painting, painting Park City's home since 1974, fredmarshallpainting.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
We're back. Thank you for listening to Mountain Money, and I especially want to thank our sponsors, Mountain West Bank, Vacasa, the Park City Chamber Bureau, Jones, Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough, Columbus Pacific Properties with Viridian and Apex Residences, San Francisco Design, Park City Mountain, and Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties.
We are especially thankful to those sponsors on this Thanksgiving week. We could not do this show without them, so thank you very much. Thanks also to our guests, Scott Michael, partner in the law firm of Kaplan and Drysdale, Sharon Backertz from Zenzi, and Nikhil Huttasingh, deputy editor at Consumer Reports. You can hear this entire show on kpcw.org. We'll have the show posted a little later this afternoon. And again, we'll include some of the links that our guests mentioned in the past 45 minutes. Thank you very much to all of our listeners. We hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving. NPR News starts right now.